Welcome to Planet Watch. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman, along with Joe Jordan. I'm here with Dr. Edward Maybach. He's a university professor and director of George Mason University's Center for Climate Change Communication. Very happy to have him with us here on Planet Watch.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks for being here. You have done some really interesting studies about how to mobilize large populations when it comes to getting them to do something different. Tell me about that work and what you've learned working with large groups of people.
When you say large groups of people, you mean all Americans, for example, yes?
I think I do. And then you did something in India, right?
Let me start by saying I'm a public health professional. This is my core training, and in public health, we understand that it's really important for when people are at risk in terms of having threats to their health, it's really important that they understand those threats. And it's really important that we help them do whatever is possible in order to reduce those threats. But as it turns out, those are two distinct but interrelated challenges. The first challenge is helping people understand the risks that they face. That's a communication challenge. The other challenge is helping them change their behavior. That's what you asked me about. That isn't really so much a communication challenge as a behavior change challenge. And we have two different ways of working depending on which of those things we're trying to do, help people understand their risks or help people change their behaviors.
So let's talk about one and then the other.
Sure.
In terms of climate change, is it hard to get people to understand the risks when they're not personally feeling them?
Yeah, climate change is the perfect storm in terms of a difficult problem to understand, meeting a human brain that isn't wired to think about long-term, slow, incremental, but yet potentially catastrophic risks. And so as it, you know, what we've seen over the past 10 or 20 years is some large changes about in terms of the way Americans understand climate change. Unfortunately, the biggest change that we've seen is that this has become a politicized issue, which has that had the consequence of driving liberal Americans' views of climate change in one direction and driving conservative Americans' views of climate change in the exact opposite direction. 20 years ago, liberal and conservative Americans saw this issue in more or less equivalent ways. Today, we couldn't be more different.
How do you depoliticize something once it's already politicized? Is there any way to take the fuse out of it?
It's always harder to change people's minds than to help them understand something from the get-go. So yes, we're in a difficult situation, but there are things we can do to help depoliticize the situation. One of those things is that most Americans think that there's a lot of disagreement about a lot of disagreement among climate scientists about whether or not human-caused climate change is happening. The reason they think that is because there's been a very well-funded, largely fossil fuel industry-driven initiative to confuse the public on this incredibly important point. The reality is that more than 97% of climate scientists are long since convinced, based on the evidence, that human-caused climate change is happening. Yet, when we ask people to tell us, well, what percent of the experts do you think are convinced that human-caused climate change is happening? On average, they tell us about 60%. So one of the ways that we found that we can depolarize public understanding of the issue is by providing people with the fact that more than 97% of the of climate scientists are in fact convinced that human-caused climate change is happening. And we have to attribute that to somebody that they will trust. As it turns out, there are lots of trustworthy organizations in America who are more than happy to communicate that happy fact. And when they do, the reason why I say it depolarizes public opinion, because it has a bigger impact on conservative Americans than on liberal Americans, because conservative Americans are the ones who have been deceived to the greatest degree about the scientific consensus.
People don't like to be fooled, and do you think one thing you could do is show them how they've been tricked? Is that something, like you take off the magician's hat and show them that there's actually an intentional misinformation campaign by the fossil fuel industry to bring out fake news, or are they just camped there, and is it waste of time? Do we need to move on to the people who are more in the middle?
You're absolutely right. People do not like to be fooled. In earlier in my life, I had the privilege of working on something called the Truth Campaign. It was an anti-smoking campaign targeting the nation's teens to try to show them that they were being fooled. The Marlboro Man and the people funding him were fooling them. And it was, I believe it is the most successful public health campaign in American history. Rates of tobacco use among teens dropped from the mid-30s down into the teens. And it really was driven by the fact that when we showed them the ways that they were being fooled, they were being made chumps by the man in the tobacco industry, they really felt strongly the need to stand up to that. My colleague, former Congressman Bob Inglis, is currently, he's one of the people featured in a current documentary called Merchants of Doubt, which is trying to do exactly the same thing, show Americans how we have been fooled by the fossil fuel industry, which very interestingly is actually in cahoots, or at very least learned a lot from the tobacco industry and from their successes in fooling the American people for so many decades.
I saw that movie and I show it to my students in my mass media class, and the biggest take home is that people kind of can be fooled easily, but once you take the mask off, as you're saying, they get pretty mad and they want to know the truth. So that was a great film, and Bob Inglis was quite the hero because he was speaking everyday people's language, and he was himself had been doubting climate change, but he kind of flipped over once he reread the actual science of it. So he was open-minded enough to have his mind changed.
And do you know how that happened? His son, his 18-year-old son, Bob was running, he had been 3 terms in the Congress representing their district in South Carolina. He decided to run for Senate. His eldest child was now of age to vote. He said, "Son, I presume I can count on you, your support." And his son, not missing a beat, said, "Dad, you can, but only if you clean up your act on the environment." So Bob got himself put on the Congressional Science Committee. He went down to Antarctica with an NSF expedition with climate scientists, and he really immersed himself in the truth, and he's never been willing to back away from that since.
Sadly, he didn't get reelected.
He didn't get elected to the Senate. He did get reelected 3 more terms in the Congress, and in 2010 he got Inglis'd. Tea Party candidates, even though Bob is quite conservative and proudly so, he got ousted in his primary by Trey Gowdy.
Hey, there's a follow-up to that Merchants of Doubt movie that uses all the same cool visuals and everything, you know, magicians doing tricks on people, only this one is like what I would call the closest thing there is to evil out there in the world today, namely this new movie, Climate Hustle. I don't know if you've seen that yet. Mark Morano, who's infamous as, you know, a big supposed debunker of climate science and climate scientists, does this really slick job. And even as a climate scientist myself, it's hard to necessarily, you have to go through the whole thing with a fine-toothed comb to find all the stuff in there. They obscure it very cleverly. And anyway, but the thing is, I got a posse of people together, had an interesting experience. We went over to watch this thing at a public event in town, and there were a whole lot of Trump supporters there. And the thing that really struck me as good news was that those Trump supporters, they were very concerned about regular old pollution, you know, in-your-face air and water pollution, all that. They seriously want to do something about it to help the world. They just don't believe the climate change stuff. But I mean, there's huge common ground there as a starting point. So relating to those people, I'm wondering what you can say about something like that, and yeah, that movie in general and so on.
Yeah, our most recent research report, we conducted, let me take a step back. I'm part of a research team where every 6 months we do a nationally representative survey of the American people, adults 18 plus, and we conducted our most recent survey the week after the election, in which Mr. Trump was made 45. What we decided recently to analyze the findings only from people who told us they voted for Mr. Trump. assuming they were the Americans who were least likely to accept that human-caused climate change is happening and least likely to support policies that will help us deal with the problem. What we actually found is that at least half of Trump's supporters understand that climate change is happening, and the majority of them, actually a solid majority of them, support a variety of different proposals, policy proposals, to deal with it, including they do not want to see Mr. Trump withdraw us from the Paris Climate Accord.
How about that? Well, I wonder if he reads the polls that you put out.
I couldn't answer that question.
Maybe his smart, advisors would. So in closing, what are some behavioral changes you would like to see as a public health professional on this other question? You've been talking about the information shifting ideas and thoughts. Of course, actions follow thoughts. And going back to the tobacco story and these other successes, what have you seen, in terms of mass change of behaviors? What can you say about that?
When we ask concerned Americans what they are doing about climate change, they tend to give us answers that are virtuous, but not necessarily effective. So I'll give an example. Almost inevitably, people tell me first that I'm really doubling down my effort to recycle everything I can. And I really do believe that's virtuous. And I also believe that our communities, the municipal waste officials in our communities, can make it easier for us to do that, right? Every American deserves curbside recycling, at a minimum. But the actions that are most impactful, the actions that every American who is concerned about this issue should be taking, are political actions. They should be letting their elected representatives at every level of government know that this is an important issue to me. And if you want my vote again, I expect you to do the right thing. I expect you to make sure that we in our community, we in our state, and we in our nation are doing everything we can to avert the worst of climate change. That is the most important action people can take. There's a second additionally important action that people can take, and that is that ultimately, globally, the most important thing we can accomplish as humanity is accelerating the inevitable transition to clean renewable energy and away from dirty fossil fuels. And most Americans can do something about that personally. I personally pay a relatively minor additional, increment on my monthly utility bill that allows me to purchase 100% clean energy from wind. I realize I'm blessed that I can afford that little tiny extra amount each month, and many Americans can't. But what they can do is they can, for example, let their public utility commission know that they expect this to be not just an option that costs us more, but an option that all of us are getting. So both our actions as consumers, particularly with regard to clean energy, and our actions as citizens with regard to letting our elected and appointed officials know we care deeply about this, those are the most important actions that any concerned American can take.
They seem like things that would not be outside the realm of a possibility to do either. You're talking about phone calls and political pressure, and you're talking about making decisions about utilities. What about this idea that if a large number of people stopped eating beef, in particular, we might impact methane? I've heard in a couple of assertions and a couple of studies, and I'm not an expert in any means, that could also be a behavioral shift on the part of many, many people who are already consuming lots. To reduce that could have a huge impact. What do you think about that behavioral change? Is that harder than driving less?
So this is a really great question you're asking. I personally have been a vegetarian since I was 20. After my 365 days of eating ground beef in every possible way it could be prepared, and I realized this is not the way, and I just decided to make a clean break. But when I talk to students, for example, at my university, and I bring up the possibility of eating less beef as an option that's available to them to reduce their own carbon footprint, and I teach in George Mason University, Fairfax, Virginia. It's not like this is cattle country. Nevertheless, I inevitably get the response from many of my students that what I'm suggesting to them is almost un-American. So something about Americans' relationship to beef tends to be particularly sensitive. So while as both as a public health professional and as somebody working to avert the worst of climate change, I am all for eating less beef, but I am also sensitive enough to realize that's a behavior that just many Americans aren't willing to consider at this time.
And going back to the idea, you know, that people felt like it was being a cowboy to smoke cigarettes, that changed, and so could this. You know, it's just we think it's American to drive a big old car, too, and that's really damaging. So we might need to shift what we think of, where we're attached to connecting things unrelated to really living here to our identity as Americans.
And, you know, one other angle on that would be just the personal health effects. So that's one way of engaging people on that and just phasing down one's eating of beef rather than, you know, quitting cold turkey, so to speak.
Cold beef. Well,
and Joe, if I could just comment one briefly on that. So the most important thing we can do to limit global warming is accelerate the transition to clean renewable energy. And the beauty of doing that is it will have immediate benefits on our health. Dirty fuel pollutes our air and our water. And while accelerating that transition will, in fact, help limit climate change, it will also give us cleaner air and cleaner water today so we can all live more healthfully.
Well, Edward Maybach, I really appreciate you being here on Planet Watch. We're so happy to have you, and thanks for dropping by at the Climate Conference.
Thank you.